D&D Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Who are they?
The Guardians of the Wheels.
The Staggering Dragon presents Guardians of the Wills, a Star Wars podcast. And now here are your hosts, Neil and Dustin.
Hey everybody, I'm Dustin.
And I'm Neil. Welcome to the Guardians of the Wills podcast. So today, before we get into our main topic of the Crystal Star, let's go straight to our featured D20 Radio Network podcast of this episode.
This episode's D20 Radio Network podcast is The Story Told, an RPG podcast that covers a variety of games and topics. Their newest episode, number 47, focuses on an important and neglected topic, abuse in the gaming industry. Luca Carroll and Carol Foley join Logan on the show as they discuss their experiences within the gaming community and how to combat and move past toxic experiences and environments. That is The Story Told, and that's on the D20 Radio Network. You can find that podcast and many others at d20radio.com.
Awesome. Okay, moving on. Now we're going to go to Cantina Talk.
We're wanted men. I have the death sentence on 12 systems.
I'll be careful.
You'll be dead.
Pull up a stool and grab a glass of blue milk. It's time for Cantina Talk.
So this week first, I think at first maybe we just have a couple announcements.
Yeah, we've got Convention Madness.
That's right.
First off, what we wanted to say is, unfortunately, we will not be at Gamer Nation Con this April. We had planned on going, but real life got in the way.
Real life did get in the way.
And we won't be able to make it, which really sucks because it's always a fun time down there in Texas with everybody from the D20 Radio Network and all the listeners and the regulars that are always at the convention. We will surely miss you guys this year, but hopefully 2021... Gamer Nation Con 8. Hopefully, we will be in attendance.
That's right.
And one other thing I wanted to mention, too. Gary, who does all of our announcements with this podcast and is one of our buddies with the Staggering Dragon, he and I are going to be at Planet Comic Con in Kansas City, March 20th through the 22nd. That's at Bartle Hall here in Kansas City, Missouri, not Kansas. Missouri.
I know where it is. Are you telling me?
I'm assuming Trump listens to this podcast, and I was just letting him know that it's Missouri now.
Oh, Kansas. That's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I forgot about that.
So Gary and I are going to be there in the game room running some Star Wars-licious games for everyone. So if you happen to be in the area, you want to come on down to the convention, we'll be downstairs in the game room. Sure to be a good time. There's always a bunch of celebrities and fun times at the Planet Comic Con here in Kansas City. So we will see you guys there March 20th through the 22nd.
Awesome. Okay, so next, I got to say, we usually, the way it just works out for us, we usually record these Sundays because that's when we have time, but we purposely waited until after Project Luminous was announced, so we can talk about that. Just because we knew, you know, they were saying it was going to be a publishing event, so we thought, well, maybe we ought to talk about that, so let's wait and see what it is. So what is it? Well, what it is what was being said it was going to be. It's going to be taking place in what they're calling the High Republic era, 200 years before any of the movies start. All new, never delved into this era before.
Are you saying that Star Wars has never told stories never. That took place in this time frame?
Never. Not a chance.
What?
No, that was kind of being sarcastic, but either way, I am kind of excited about it because anything that they're going to add to the story, I'm going to be all about. I just, as you could tell, probably tell from our reactions, we both kind of had a chuckle at that because, in our opinion, it's not the first time that they've done anything in that time frame. I do like in some of the stuff they're saying how it's not going to have anything to do with the movies or anything like that, since it's going to be before those characters. However, I think we can all agree that Yoda would have been alive, but that's for another time. We won't worry about that. Maybe it was in his rebellious teens, and he was just, I don't know, having street races. Wasn't a Jedi then. I don't know. But I do kind of like that part of it, that they're going to try to, that they're openly saying, we're going to separate it from that, going to tell our own story and all that. And I'm totally fine with it. Jokes aside, whatever. Yoda never shows up and they don't mention him and pretend he's born 20 years after. I don't care. Whatever they need to do, make themselves sleep at night. What do you think about it?
I kind of had the same thoughts that you did. The one thing that I find kind of strange is that it's 200 years before the Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. If they're going to like totally break away from anything that has anything to do with anything we've ever seen.
Add an extra zero to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Why is it only 200 years?
That doesn't seem very far away.
You should, like, let's talk about 1,000.
Yeah, I agree.
Just totally distance yourself if you're really going for it. Do it.
How old's Chewbacca?
Like 600, 800?
Yeah,
I don't know
how old he is. Probably should look that. Just kind of thought about that. But I guess all I was getting at is, we joking around about Yoda. We know he's supposed to be alive. I mean, he's 900 years old in Return of the Jedi. So he was alive. So there's still, yeah. And if it's only two, he's 700 and some years old. I'm assuming he's a fairly prominent member. I don't know. I don't know what his life was at that point. But I guess all I'm getting at is, you're still not totally separating it. Now, I do like that they announced it. I like that they're saying this is going to be a mixture of young adult books, comic books, and all that stuff, and put it all together. I like that. I do think it's kind of fun, and I am definitely excited for it. I'm the same way as you. When they were saying all the rumors of High Republic era, I was thinking the same thing some thousands of years ago.
Right.
But whatever.
Yeah.
They want to write around it. That's fine.
We'll see how it turns out, how interesting it ends up being. But for me personally, I'm so rooted in legends in my brain that it's really hard for me to not think about the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic, the comic book series, the Dark Horse comic book series,
yeah,
which was absolutely fantastic. Revan, you know, from the Knights of the Old Republic video game, is one of my favorite Star Wars characters of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking about the Tales of the Jedi comics, which, I'll be honest, I didn't read them as in-depth as we have here recently.
No.
On the show. And
I hadn't read them.
Man, they're really, really good. So there's pretty high bar for me that's already been set. So
I agree.
We'll see what happens with all of that.
I looked it up. Chewbacca was born 200 years, a BBY.
Uh-huh.
So, let's see. When is Phantom Menace? Like 20 years before that? No.
Yeah.
Is that about right? I don't know.
Something like that.
I am
20, 30, 30 maybe?
Sounds good. So, he wasn't born yet, but still, it's
maybe
fine.
We'll see his mommy and his daddy.
Maybe we're going to see him get conceived in a youth novel. Very graphic. But I'm excited for it, and I hope a lot of people are excited for it, because we certainly don't want them to lose their enthusiasm for it. I did have one thought. You can think whatever you want about the sequel trilogy. I mean, we both have our own separate thoughts. We do agree on a lot of things about it. But do you think that ever since Disney, do you think there's a chance that ever since Disney bought it, they've wanted to step out and do their own thing and felt like they had to do a sequel trilogy before they were allowed, for lack of a better word, to tell their own story?
Yeah, I absolutely think that.
I kind of do too. And it would be, I like the sequel trilogy. 8's never going to be my favorite thing ever, even when I try to rewatch it. You and I both like 9. Obviously, a lot of people don't like 9. A lot do, a lot don't, whatever. But it does make you think, boy, with people that are disappointed in all of the sequel trilogy, part of the sequel trilogy, whatever, it just makes you wonder, boy, if Disney had been more focused on doing that as opposed to doing it because they felt like they had to, if that's the case, obviously all speculation on my part, but if they were just doing it because they felt like they had to as opposed to, we want to tell this part first.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder what would have been different if they had taken the time. And this, and you know, one of the big complaints about the sequel trilogy for people that don't like it is that it didn't feel like they planned it out, which they said they didn't plan it out.
They didn't.
So, they shouldn't even say they feel like they didn't plan it out, but now they're announcing this where they're acting like they have a solid, cohesive plot line in place.
Well, if you watch the little video that's on, I think StarWars.com has a little video about it that I watched earlier today, and it sure makes you think that everybody's, because it literally shows everybody sitting around a table hashing out the story, or that's what it's telling you is what's going on.
It
so
sure is.
They get all the comic book writers and the novel, you know, the novelists, and Pablo Hidalgo's in there, and they got a whiteboard, and somebody's drawing a line, and the narrator's saying, everybody got together to do this. So unless they're just totally lying,
blowing smoke,
then yeah, they're doing it the right way. And I agree. You said, they should have done it this way from the beginning.
From the get-go. And that's even coming from, I mean, we both, I think, both like the way the sequel trilogy ended up.
Yeah.
The journey, whatever. Like you, don't like it.
Yep.
But it would have been better had that happened. Okay, well, moving past that.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
It's time for this episode's Prime Focus.
Now we're on to something we know has been planned since George Lucas first thought of the idea of Star Wars. And that's The Crystal Star by Vonda M. N. McIntyre. How dare I screw that up? All right. So this was released way back in December of 94. And as Dustin has pointed out to me before we started, this is the last Star Wars book or comic book, correct, to come out in 1994?
Yep. This is going to wrap up 1994 in the Legends timeline for us.
Nice. Nice. That's kind of neat. We're moving forward. So, this takes place 14 years ABY, 3 years after the Jedi Academy trilogy, 10 years after Return of the Jedi. So, we're going to get into this now. Dustin's going to read us the opening crawl.
And I haven't read this until right now, so we'll see how it goes and how much I have to edit.
So, hopefully there's no long words in it.
Star Wars, The Crystal Star. Princess Leia's children have been kidnapped. Along with Chewbacca and R2-D2, she follows the kidnappers' trail to a disabled refugee ship, from which children are also missing. Here she learns of a powerful Imperial officer with a twisted plan to restore the Empire. Meanwhile, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker are cut off from Leia by the death of a nearby star, which has caused a disruption in the Force. They have gone to the planet Cressia to investigate a report of a lost group of Jedi. Instead, they find a charismatic alien named Waru, whose miraculous healing powers have attracted a fanatic following. As Leia follows the path of her children across space, Luke and Han draw closer to the truth behind Waru's sinister cult. Together, they will face an explosive showdown that will decide the survival of the New Republic and the universe itself.
And the universe itself. Finally, we're stepping up the stakes to the actual universe. Okay. So we kind of, most times we sort of go in an order, but we're doing this one just a little bit different. We're just going to, there's three very distinct plot lines. Would you agree going on in this book?
Yep. It's pretty cut and dry.
So we're just going to kind of go over each one. We're going to start with the first plot line. Plot line number one. Well, before we go to that right now, I want to say plot line one, two, and three take place over 400 and some odd pages, which is way longer than most of the Star Wars books we've read so far.
Yeah,
you take that as you will.
I've also got to say, we got this book at about the same time, roughly, you and I did. You finished it way faster than I did, because I read the first 100 pages and then put it away for weeks.
Yeah.
Well, it took me a long time to come back to the book.
I tried to make myself now, because I live in a very small town, and I made myself stop buying the books, you know, whether I meant half price books, like if I'm Kansas City and I'll buy half price books or off Amazon or whatever. And I've been getting them from the library, but I say we're in a small town, so shockingly, our small library doesn't have a bunch of Star Wars books. Certainly, Star Wars books from 1994.
It doesn't have multiple copies of the Crystal Star?
It doesn't. So, they're always an interlibrary loan, and when you do that, you have to make sure you get them, and then you only get them. You don't even get them for the full, I think, when you check out a book, it's 3 weeks here anyway. But when you get those, you only get them for 2 weeks, and they don't really want you to recheck them. They want you to get them back. So I've been doing that, because then you have to read them, because you only
you
have
were forced
them
so to.
Otherwise, you're going to have to buy a book or something that you finish, or you only have 100 pages left in, or whatever. So that helps. You got to give yourself deadlines.
I have the collector's itch, or the collector's addiction, or problem, or whatever it is, because I go on Amazon and I hit the buy button.
Yeah,
I want it on my shelf, and I have to. I can't not have it.
I know. There's some that I'm still going to buy, and there may even be some that, here's a good example. I got The Truce at Bakura for this show from the library, and now I have it. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
It's a good book.
Yeah.
But anyway,
right.
Back to what we were talking about. Plot line number one.
Well, hey, one more thing.
Yes.
Real quick. There is an audiobook.
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring
that up. Of this. And I listened to it the other day. And you were talking about the 400 some odd pages of this novel.
They cut it down to 60.
If you don't want to subject yourself to that. There is an audiobook, and it's the standard abridged audiobook. It's about 3 hours long. I think Anthony Harold is the guy that's doing it. He did all those audiobooks back in this time period before the glorious Mark Thompson came on board.
Oh, well, good.
But if you need, like, the condensed version, then you don't want to read the 400 pages.
It's there.
Grab the audiobook. 3 hours of your life. You will get the gist of what's happening, and you'll be good to go.
Well, good. Now, we're on to plot line one. Build up is over. So, the first plot we're going to talk about is that Jaina and Jason and Anakin have been kidnapped. The only way to start this, and you'll never see it coming that the kids are going to get kidnapped until you read the first line of the book.
I've got it right here. Do you want me to read the first line of the book?
I do.
Chapter one. The children had been kidnapped.
Boom. There's your stakes. The children had been kidnapped. So, there's some things I kind of want to talk about towards the end. So, we're going to try to go over the plot fairly quickly. So, we're not going to dive into great detail. But basically, the kids have been kidnapped. They're with Lord Hethrir, with a bunch of other kids. And you've learned throughout this that he's figuring out who all is force sensitive. I took out of it anyway. Anakin, it's been noted since before he was born that he's freakishly force sensitive. So, of course, he targets him. Their ages in this, what are they, around five? The older two, around five, six?
I think Jaina and Jason are five and Anakin's three.
Okay, that's what I had in my head, was five and three. So, when they write, it's mostly from Jaina's point of view.
Right.
And they write it as if a child is saying stuff. And I'm okay with that, whatever. And I even noticed in my head that I was even, my inner monologue was a child's voice, which I thought was, hey, that's cool, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're learning this, and you kind of have them, I mean, they are in a rough situation. It sucks, for sure.
Yeah.
But you want to feel bad for them, but this is probably not the book where we're going to see the Solo children get slaughtered. So it's hard to ever be that scared for them, I guess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it'd be different if they hadn't been kidnapped before.
Before.
Because this is, I was trying to count the other day. So Anakin kind of, well, he got touched through the Force by the Emperor in Dark Empire, right?
Dark Empire, yeah.
If you want to count that as an abduction, whatever.
A little weird, at least.
And then in the Jedi Academy trilogy, they get kidnapped.
Sure.
And then you get done with the Jedi Academy trilogy and you jump into the very next book. They got kidnapped again.
They just keep good. They just keep getting it. So they get, yes, they are kidnapped. Whatever. They're in this detention center.
Han and Leia are terrible parents.
They are. They're
is
awful.
What I'm learning.
Just absolutely miserable parents. But you have this other character there named Tigress, who essentially becomes Anakin's primary caretaker in it, who he totally grows to adore Anakin or whatever, starts to see him more as a child, like, as a child, I guess, and wants to take care of him. And of course, Lord Hethrir does not approve of that, and such and so forth. I don't know. We're kind of joking around a lot. It is what it is. The kids get kidnapped. They're in a bad spot. You find out eventually that Lord Hethrir's got some nefarious intentions to do with him, more specifically Anakin, and he's going to take him to a place to do that, and I think that should move us on to plot line number two. So plot line number two, the title of plot line number two is we found another way to weaken Luke so he doesn't take everybody out. I think, is that the name of the chapter, plot line two?
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it says in the book. Word for word.
It is. So they go to, Dustin says it's called Circe. Is that what you called it?
I think it's Cressia.
Cressia, okay. I didn't listen to the audiobook. Dustin did. We're going to assume they pronounce things correctly.
It's been a few days since I listened to it. I think that's how it's pronounced.
It shouldn't be hard to say. It's spelled C-R-S-E-I-H. The traditional spelling. I assume.
A lot of consonants all jammed together.
So Luke and Han and C-3PO go to Cressia Station, where they run into one of Han's ex-lovers, because she's just hanging out there, I guess. And while they're there, like we said, Luke starts acting funny, I guess, for lack of a better word. Distant, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And they learn from Zaveri. How did they say her name in the audiobook?
Zaveri. Just like how you said it.
Okay. They learn about Waru from Zaveri, who has a cult-like following, I'll call it. Are you good with that?
Yeah. Should we describe the weirdness that is Waru in this book?
Yes, because that is one of the things I would like to talk about.
Let's talk about that.
So he's a blob? Is he a blob? What is he?
Yeah, he's a blob covered in gold-plated shields?
Yeah. So they get to see him during one of the ceremonies. And of course, like we said, Luke's nuts at this point. And you're seeing most of this through Han's eyes. Like, we get to see stuff through Jaina's eyes. It's still written in the third person, but
right,
you're seeing it from their point of view. So of course, Han sees that this is nuts. So families and stuff come to Waru because they have a sick kid or sick whatever, and he's going to heal them. So some of them he heals, some of them he kills, and Han sees that immediately, that he's clearly murdering people.
But the people don't know that they're getting killed. People think that
it's just a
byproduct. Yeah, he couldn't save him. You didn't bring him to me in time.
Whatever. They were too far
that
gone.
Kind of thing. And we should mention, too, that the reason that they're here is because Luke is running down a lead of a potential Jedi candidate.
Yes.
That's why they're here in the first place. Totally. And Han saw it as a vacation.
Yeah, he saw it as a vacation.
He just wanted to get away and go hang out somewhere else.
He was going to gamble and stuff like that.
Yeah, by the way, Han gambles like two or three times. He plays Sabacc and gambles their money away in this book.
He does. He's got a problem.
He does. If there's like an 888 bets off hotline in Star Wars,
they need
to call it because he has a serious gambling problem.
He does have a serious problem. They just get more money for the New Republic. So they see Waru in this being that no one's ever seen before. As we said, Luke's going nuts. We're jumping ahead and back and whatever a lot. I realize that. But we eventually learn that Luke's going nuts because the crystal star, the sun, is dying of this planet. And apparently a dying star affects the Force in that area and makes Jedi go nuts. Because, all right.
Sure.
That's cool. Okay.
It's resonating.
Fine. I was just thinking, couldn't that have been a weapon? But it's okay. That's not, and that isn't canon anymore. Otherwise, Kylo Ren would have went nuts when Starkiller Base was destroying that.
Yeah.
Although maybe it has to be a slow death. I don't know.
That's a good
point.
But
it's not canon anymore, well, so it doesn't matter.
The crystal star, though, it was like plunging into a black hole or something like that. And it was like the resonating quality of it that was making the Force users kind of go kooky.
It was. Anyhow, so they go nuts. Luke's no help. Han's trying to save everything. Remember earlier we said Lord Hethrir has some nefarious plans. Well, they obviously include taking the children to the same planet that Luke and Han are on. So that's going to happen too. Don't worry. But before we get there, let's talk about plot line number 3. The Great Adventures of Lalila.
Yes. Yeah.
Of Lalila and Chewie's fake name. I can't remember what his fake name was. I don't care.
Gahab or something like that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Maybe you should explain that for somebody's listening to this podcast that hasn't plowed through the 400 pages
for
of this
book.
For
some reason you didn't read the book, Leia and Chewie need to be undercover to find the kids, I guess, because... Okay, yeah, I forgot about it. We should say, the planet Leia's on that the kids get kidnapped from, she's told not to do anything because kids get kidnapped all the time. That's part of their culture. Don't worry about it. That's just what we do. Why did they ever bring the kids in? Maybe they should have... Hey, don't bring your kids because we just kidnap them constantly. So they don't do anything about it. Otherwise, somebody might kill them.
Not only that, from a writing standpoint, why would you even put it that in? I didn't understand because
I didn't get,
they described all this weirdness of the culture wanting to
kidnap
people. It's part of what they do. And there's like a big game back and forth of negotiating to get the people back. Ugh. And then once Leia leaves that planet to go pursue the kids, it never comes up the rest of the book.
Never comes up again.
I kept waiting for that to be a point somewhere, and it never happened.
It wasn't. But they leave the planet because R2 figures out that, it was somebody not on this planet that took the kids. We got to go find them. So they do, but decides they got to be undercover. So she changes her look and changes her name to Lalila, and Chewie changes his name to Gahab. Was that what you called it? I don't remember.
It's something like that.
Chewbacca, I think, is what he changed it to. And they run across a ship dying, and due to the convenience of the plot, the ship has a person on there named Relau. Is that how you said they say it in the audiobook? Relau?
Yeah, or Relau or something Relau? Like that.
Great.
Relau.
Relau is on the ship. They wake her up. Because she's being tortured. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And so they wake her up. So she's going to go along with them. She instantly recognizes him. Instantly. Doesn't even question it once. Yeah, I know who you are. I'm not stupid. This is dumb. Why would you try to hide your identity? So they search for the kids. They eventually find the children, other than Anakin, I think, because the children escape. Don't worry. They're very resourceful for five-year-olds, because Jason talks to a dragon.
Yes.
He does. Says, can you help us? He's like, yeah.
Hold on. Before we get to the dragon, maybe we should talk about how Leia tracks him down, because...
How does she track him down? She goes...
She uses the Force.
Yeah, she does.
Initially, she uses the Force to feel her way through hyperspace.
Yeah, you're right.
To get to the point where Relau is.
Yeah.
And then they decide... So this is one of the parts that's cut out of the audiobook. After Relau and Leia and Gayahab and everybody team up and decide... Relau says that they need to go to the indexer or something like that.
Yes.
To get some kind of information. I was really confused on that whole part. Too. Well, it's not even in the audiobook. You know why? Because it doesn't matter.
The guy didn't
get it. It makes no difference.
That's stupid.
But anyway, they're traveling through hyperspace, and Leia feels Jaina's presence through the Force.
Yeah.
Throws the ship out of hyperspace. They are conveniently right at the planet where, or the world craft.
Yes.
That Jaina and Jason and Anakin. Anakin's not there right now.
Are currently making their escape on.
Yeah. There was a lot of things that were really convenient through the plot of this book.
And we're going to get to more of those convenient things soon. So she gets the kids. The kids tell her, she gets two of the kids. And the kids. And a bunch of other children, too. But the kids tell her that Lord Hethrir took Anakin to, I don't know, they probably just straight up said, to the planet that Dad and Luke are on.
They called it Asylum Station?
Yeah, something like that.
And then they come to find out that Cressia and Asylum are
the same thing.
The same place.
So then they all go there so they can reunite or whatever. So now all of our principal characters are on Cressia Station. Cressia Station, that's how you said it. Cressia Station. And now we've started to also find out that also, by the way, the person with Anakin Tigris, Lord Hethrir, the one that stole him.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, kidnapped him. And Relau. Relau and Lord Hethrir were married, and Tigris is their kid, because why wouldn't they be at this point? And now we've also learned that Lord Hethrir and Relau were Darth Vader's apprentices when he was with the Emperor, and they were going to produce some super force-powered kid in Tigris, and he didn't have the Force, so that Lord Hethrir was disappointed. I don't know. It was just, what? It just kind of feels like, it's like, what are you talking about? But I want to talk about that more in just a little bit.
Okay.
We got to have our final showdown with all Lord Hethrir's disciples and then our heroes. One thing I want to point out at this part is everybody has a lightsaber.
Yes.
Every single person in the book, I think, has a lightsaber to fight with that they don't really use. Whatever. Lord Hethrir gets overrun with people, and then he still is able to, he's going to sacrifice Anakin to Waru so Waru can get power and then give him power, some horse manure like that. And Leia and Luke end up going inside Waru's. However they get inside of him and swim around, and they're just going to, Luke's just going to die in there. He just chooses to die, and then Han comes in and swims around in there too or some crap. They hold hands and swim out. He comes billing out. So then Waru, he's defeated. His hit points are low. And he collapses upon himself and goes back to his other universe.
His other dimension.
Yeah, what in the world? Yeah, okay, that's it. Happened. That's the story. We've gone through the plot, broken it down perfectly.
You just went through 400 pages in like 10 minutes. Yeah,
that's all you need to know. Because I want to move past that to what we found interesting in the book. Because I want to start with it. Okay, Let's talk about the things that are never going to be touched upon again. Darth Vader had a husband and wife apprentice that they were going to use to make some super force being. Didn't pan out. And Luke's met them. Luke and Leia have met, at least her. I mean, you know, whatever with Hethrir, but they've met her. She's a good person. You'd think they'd want to be like, hey, what was he like when the Emperor wasn't around? Nope. Never shows up again. Never. Not a single mention of this person that had intimate knowledge of their dad. Don't want it. Nope. It's cool. Never want
to
see her.
Not only that, but they invited her to the Jedi Academy.
Yeah.
At the end
of
the book.
Luke and her talk about, hey, sometime we ought to
spar.
Spar. That's what I was trying. I about said joust. It wasn't right. I think we ought to spar sometime. Yeah, we should totally do that. Well, see you later. Then they left. It looks like, did you get her phone number? Nope. All right. Well, I guess that's that. We won't worry about that ever again. And then, and so it's really interesting. And then the other super interesting thing about this book is that they straight up say, well, Rue was from another dimension or another universe.
Yeah.
Never mentioned again that apparently there's multiple universes out there that maybe they should be concerned with.
Right. Well, you know, about that specifically, about halfway through the book, I just so happened to read the about the author for no reason at all.
You're
well,
right.
She has written, it says, and I quote, several New York Times best-selling Star Trek novels.
Ah, well, there you go. That makes a lot of sense.
After I read that and I finished the last half of this book, I could not get that out of my head.
Uh-huh.
That this felt more like a Star Trek plot
it
than
does.
It did a Star Wars
I
plot.
I absolutely agree with just the Star Wars elements thrown in, like the Force and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So is there anything you found interesting about the book? Interesting can have a lot of meanings, too.
Yeah. I think what I said before about Leia tracking the kids through hyperspace using the Force.
Yeah.
That's kind of sequel trilogy-esque, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not they actually, I can't remember if they actually did it or not in the sequel trilogy. It sure sounds like something that they would have thrown in the sequel trilogy.
Well, I mean, it's, I don't know, the Chiss using Skywalkers to navigate through hyperspace. I mean,
sure.
I know that's not part of the sequel trilogy, but it is part of the canon.
Right. It's something that came way after this
yes.
book. I don't know. Things I found interesting. Well, gosh.
It's tough.
It is tough. So, full disclosure, we usually have the what didn't you like about the book section of our podcast. Well, when I was typing up the outline, I was like, well, we should probably put a what did you like.
What did you like, yes.
Because there wasn't, I mean, we could go on and on about what we didn't like about the book, mm-hmm. but it might be harder to come up with something that you did like about the book. I know you said Zavari you weren't too keen on,
no.
who was Han's former lover.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like it when we get a little bit of Han Solo backstory in there every once in a while, so it kind of fills out his character
mm-hmm.
more. And I find it interesting that he flat out told Luke that if she would have been on board, he and her would have gotten married.
Yeah.
And that, you know, all the adventures with Han, Luke, and Leia never would have happened.
Never would have happened. Now, and I said the other couple things about what I find interesting about the book. I also, something I do, and those things are things I find interesting in a type of way. Like, we're just never going to revisit that. But
mm-hmm.
I do find Lord Hethrir's kind of story and motivation pretty interesting. And I mean, he's actually a pretty decent villain. I mean, he's powerful in the
he's
Force.
He's a bastard.
Yeah, he's powerful in the Force. He was trained by super evil Darth Vader and all of that. And he's been apparently biding his time.
Yeah.
To do what he wants to do and rebuild the Empire in his image. And the way he uses the Force to, they talk about it like
Jaina kind of talks about it like wrapping a blanket around her.
Mm-hmm.
That she can't do anything and can feel it pressing down on her and that kind of stuff. So he's, like I said, he's very powerful in the Force, and I think he's actually a pretty good villain. And I do, and that's something that I don't just find interesting. I do like that. I think he's mm-hmm. a good villain. He just kind of feels wasted, but not as wasted as Rilau feels. Why did we never see her again? That is a joke.
You brought up a good point about them talking about Darth Vader, because I didn't even really think about it until you said that. But yeah, they could have gained a lot of information from her and from Hethrir, but Hethrir ends up dying inside of Waru.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Rilau, she's just hits the trail.
Peace.
And see you later. You never see her again. So, yeah.
She did get her contract renewed to be a main character. So it didn't happen.
Hey, by the way, do you think that the fact that Star Wars, The Crystal Star, is a New York Times best-selling novel had anything to do with the fact that it was riding off the coattails of the Thrawn trilogy and the Jedi Academy trilogy?
It's its own legs. Just the name.
Sorry, Vonda N. McIntyre. I didn't mean to
totally
bash you there, but
well,
come
and something
on.
Else we learn in this book is how we talk about the crystal star and the black hole and the resonating, how it can screw with the Force. So something can screw with the Force. Seems like that would maybe come up. Maybe it doesn't have to be this exact thing, but there can be. I mean, I know we've had Aes Sedai already and stuff like that, but some natural thing that would shut down a whole star system's ability to have the Force? I don't know. You could mm-hmm. piggyback off that, but it just goes away. So,
right.
Anyhow, now we're going to, we still do need to move on to, can you think of anything at all you didn't like about the book?
The fact that it was 400 pages long? The fact that whoever edited this book, took a nap.
It started out at
and turned it back
pages.
He got the manuscript, didn't even read it.
It's good.
Gave it back. He said, "Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
It'll be a New York Times bestseller."
It's a New York Times bestseller.
No, I not only is the book long, but the chapters, I have a hang up with chapters. They're either too short or they're too long.
I agree.
Because I thought Kevin J. Anderson's chapters in the Jedi Academy trilogy were way too short chapters. And then in this book, good Lord, like 50 page long chapters, it felt like. Like I kept reading to try to get to a stopping point, and I'm like, oh my God, how much longer is this
That's
chapter?
That's part of the
go?
Reason I finished it so fast, because if you're going to make yourself read a chapter, it's 40 pages long.
Yeah.
You're going to get through. There's six chapters over these 400 pages.
Yeah. I think the perspective from the little kid's point of view,
it's tough,
man. That's fine when it's broken up in little increments, but
yes,
the reason I stopped after 100 pages and had to wait a while to come back is because the last from page 50 to 100, that's all it was.
Yeah.
Was when they get kidnapped and them describing everything and how they feel and questioning, you know, like a child would. I'm not saying the writing's bad, because like you said,
the writing's
good, because
it is good.
It does make you feel like you're in her shoes experiencing this.
Inner monologue immediately went to a little kid, because it feels like you're talking to a 5-year-old.
But at the same time, when it goes for that long, I was like, oh,
it's also
God.
Like a conversation with a 5-year-old. You just want it to be over.
Yes. Yeah. So all that being said, here's my number one gripe about the book. I'll ask you three questions.
Okay. Answer these riddles three.
Yes. Are there any blaster shootouts in this book?
I don't believe so.
Are there any spaceship fights through space?
There's one spaceship that lands on a world star or whatever and picks some kids up.
Are there any epic lightsaber duels?
There's a lot of lightsabers. They don't duel.
Right. This was the least Star Wars feeling book of that has the word Star Wars on the cover of it that I have read in my 42 years of being on Earth.
I agree. I do agree with that. That's a really good way to put it. As far as what I just really didn't like about the book, yeah, the length is, I mean, it is, it's long. All that, yeah. Talk about it missing some of the key action pieces that were used to being in there, but I think, frankly, that what in Star Wars in itself is built on plot convenience, I guess, because they're roaming a galaxy where they constantly run into each other.
Yes.
That's rough.
Yeah.
But,
right.
I mean, Luke and Han are going to go to a planet to look for a Jedi. Don't worry. It happens to be our main villain's end goal. Leia gets the kids kidnapped and then dashes through hyperspace and happens to stop right by the guy's wife.
Yeah.
So she can pick her up to take her. And then, of course, you know, the kids are in their own thing with said lady's wife and son. And they all magic. I don't know. It was just more like, well, yeah, of course. Of course they are. Just like they tell Leia not to worry because they're on a planet where kidnapping is normal. That's just a thing that happens. And I think that got me the most about the book.
It's time for this episode's Spotlight.
We're going to move on to our episode Spotlight. Now, this is, if this wasn't our episode Spotlight, I was going to bring this up in what I find interesting about the book. But it is our episode Spotlight. And this is going to be about the lightsabers that Lord Hethrir has that you have to use the Force to turn on versus having a physical switch. And it's something he uses as a test. If you have the Force, you can do it. I actually thought this was a really, really cool idea that we never see again, ever. But it is a really cool idea because it's neat to think, in a way, it's kind of a safeguard, because if I'm a Jedi and I can turn my lightsaber on with the Force, but I fumble it away or whatever, and you, some common human, picks it up that doesn't have the Force, you're not going to turn it on and stab me or turn it on and stab yourself. Plus, it's just kind of, there's kind of a cool factor to it.
Yeah, we should also mention that Lord Hethrir is creating what he calls the Empire Reborn.
Yes, the Empire Reborn.
And so his whole motivation is to kidnap all these kids, find out which ones have the Force, and then he's going to create an empire full of Force-sensitive kids, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's the test, is can you turn on the lightsaber that doesn't have a button?
Yep.
Now, in my foggy memory of my life, there was a point in time that I could have swore somewhere around the prequel, like maybe before episode one came out, I can't remember, that I thought that that's how you turned on a lightsaber.
Yeah.
And I'm almost sure that in episode one, I think it's Qui-Gon's lightsaber, you see a button and you see one of them actually press the button. And I remember seeing that in episode one thinking, well, I didn't think lightsabers had buttons. I thought you just turned it on with the will of the Force. Now, that could have been, you know, somebody at some point or something I read somewhere in the mid to late 90s reciting something from this book, for all I know.
Could be.
You know, but I thought that was how it was, just regardless.
Yeah, but, I mean, Han uses one, too.
That's true.
And we'd already seen that. But
you just squashed my whole theory.
Squash it. That's right. But it is a really cool idea. And it'd be, like I said, it's almost a safety mechanism or just a cool factor in thinking, like, you know, I can throw it and turn it on in the air. Obviously, if it has a button, you can do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I get all that, but there's just something about it. And in my mind, and I can't remember exactly how I was describing the book, but I assume the physical switch is probably just covered up, you know, is internal, and they're just moving it. I doubt they're like
right.
moving the crystal into place or anything like that. I imagine
sure.
it's just a physical switch they're doing inside of it and all that stuff. So it's all internalized, but it's a really cool idea. I mean, it just goes to show this maybe isn't the most widely regarded book, but there can be neat ideas that come from it.
Right.
And I think that's one of them from anything. And that's one of them, not to mention the fact that we're going to openly admit there's sentient beings in other universes that have a way to make it to our universe being the Star Wars universe / galaxy. But yeah. Don't worry. No one's going to ever be concerned with it again. It doesn't matter. So that's okay. We won't worry about that. But that is going to move us right to our roll the dice part.
Tell me, how do you feel about 45-year-old virgins who still live with their parents?
Comb the sweet tarts out of your beard and you're on.
Grab your tower. It's time to roll the dice.
We talked about that cool lightsaber, so it started making us think about one neat thing that could be if you were going to play a Jedi would be building your lightsaber. Of course, you can just say you have a lightsaber, and I think when we played, we've just kind of had a lightsaber. But you could make it a whole part of the campaign of going to build your own lightsaber, and then,
sure.
And you know, and of course, there's going to be rules laid out for it, but you can always make up your own, too, about this lightsaber being special and having that. I mean, you could end up building like Ezra's lightsaber from the first one he had in Rebels that he could shoot, you know, mm-hmm. and stun people and whatnot with it. So you could do anything you wanted with it, but this book's a good example of, hey, go nuts with it if you want to, or just make the traditional lightsaber. But
yeah, and there's the Clone Wars episode, the little Younglings episode,
yes.
where they go to get their lightsaber crystals.
Yeah, we'll get their crystals.
I always looked at that episode as a really good RPG adventure.
Yep.
It was like a little one-shot for your party to go get their crystals. And there's one thing that people really like about games, whether it's a video game or it's a role-playing game, is customizing your gear.
Yes.
You know, and that's exactly what this is. I'm going to go get this crystal because out of the umpteenth, you know, dozen crystals that there are, I want mine to do this.
I want mine to do this. And I believe, at least in Saga Edition, weren't there special crystals that had certain abilities to them?
In the, I think it's the Jedi Academy source book for Saga Edition is where that, you know, building your lightsaber and all the mm-hmm. different crystals and what powers they have, all that's laid out. And then Fantasy Flight Games Star Wars RPG has similar crystals, you know, from Legends, basically. They're kind of scattered about through several different books, but it's pretty interesting when you start reading about the different powers that a different crystal can have.
Yep, and I think that's kind of neat. Well, and you know, I just thought about this. I mentioned, like, Ezra's first lightsaber he makes and how it can shoot. Also, Kanan, when he's going to teach Ezra how to use a lightsaber before he builds one, he talks about his lightsaber has a dial to make the blade longer and shorter to adjust it to your height. Now, that's kind of neat, too. That's totally part of canon, that you can do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we've seen lightsabers that extend, or we will see lightsabers that can extend and stuff later on if we haven't already. But
yeah, that's from the Jedi Academy trilogy, Gantoris's lightsaber that Kip ends up getting extends. It can extend.
Does it? Okay. That's right. It does, doesn't it?
And then later on down the road, we're going to see Corn Horns.
Yep. Anyway, I think it's just kind of, just reading about those particular lightsabers made me think, man, you can really just go nuts. You could have, like Dustin said, you could have a whole, maybe not a whole campaign, but certainly a whole session that's all it was. And possibly multiple sessions of building your lightsaber. And you could always be working on it, too.
Sure.
So, moving past that, we got to rate this sucker. What do you give the Crystal Star in a rating of 5 to 8 stars? How many do you give it? No, 0 to 5. Severed limbs.
0 to 5 severed limbs. Woo! Trying to think back on how low I've gone. And I think... I think the first Thrawn book of the new canon that Timothy Zahn wrote that we talked about a long time ago on the podcast. I think I gave it like a 2.5 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to give this a solid 2 out of 5. I'm going to go ahead and swipe off a couple legs, and I'm going to give this person a copy of this book that I just cut their legs off because they still got arms and a head.
They can read it.
They can't run away. They have to stay and read all 400 pages of this book.
See what happens. Well, I got to tell you, I've had this book rated since the moment I read it. We made fun of it. I've made fun of it quite a bit. But I tell you, I'm also giving it a 2, but it's a very enthusiastic 2. Because, and I say that because it's not that good. It's just not. But I do think there's some interesting ideas that we've gone over. I don't need to repeat them. But the things I've said, are they interesting? Yes. Are they frustrating? Sure. Because they never happen again. But they are interesting. Another thing I will say about this book is it's completely throwaway.
Yeah.
If it's never feels like it's never spoken of again. So it's just gone. But for what it is, it's okay. Eh. It's just kind of there. I certainly don't regret reading it. It's an okay story. As long as it is, and as drug out as things are, it still doesn't feel like there's as much filler in this as there is in some other things we've read. Like that dadgum blob race. That was awful. Oh, my God, yeah. That was awful.
You got a point there.
And this still doesn't feel like it has as much filler as that. It's just, if we knew that they were going to build on some more ideas in this, I probably would rate it higher. And I'm probably not the only person that thinks that way. It's just more like this, it's just kind of there. It is, it's right. A thing that exists. It got published and it was in a New York Times bestseller from what I understand. So I'm going to give it a very enthusiastic 2. It was all right. What are you going to do?
Well,
that's that.
You want to wrap this sucker up?
Wrap this sucker up.
All right. You can find Guardians of the Wills on iTunes, Stitcher, thestaggeringdragon.com, and d20radio.com. Email us at thestaggeringdragonllc@gmail.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook. And we always encourage you to leave us comments and feedback and let us know how many severed limbs you would give for the Crystal Star.
Awesome.
So, what are we doing next time?
Next time, we're going to start the Krillian Trilogy.
Yes.
So, trilogy implies that there's 3 of them, and we're going to start with the first one.
What?
Ambush of Krillia by Roger McBride Allen. So, that'll be what you'll hear next time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
And may the force of others be with you.
You've been listening to the Guardians of the Wills podcast. This podcast is not affiliated with Disney or Lucasfilm and is meant for entertainment and educational purposes only.